This is shameful.
Russia's Ukraine invasion intensifies. It's Friday, March 4th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, calls for immigration relief, massive Australia flooding, museum controversy. It's all on today's VOA Asia. More than 1 week into the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Russian forces continue their push despite condemnation from the United Nations General Assembly, which voted overwhelmingly to reprimand Russia for invading Ukraine. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has the latest.
Russian shelling hammering Ukraine, with reports the southern city of Kherson has fallen to the Russian military. Thousands of civilians killed or wounded since the invasion began, Ukrainian authorities say. Babies like this one in Kyiv, born in the cellars of hospitals, as Ukrainians in cities across the country are forced underground.
Sheltering wherever they can, including children receiving cancer treatment, who are now living in the basements of Ukraine's children's hospitals, with doctors and nurses doing their best to care for them as explosions boom overhead. This is shameful.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced further sanctions on Russian businesses, this time on 22 defense-related entities that make the combat weapons used to attack the Ukrainian people. A ban on Russian aircraft entering American airspace now in place, with Belarus also sanctioned for its role in enabling the Russian invasion. Near Kyiv, U.S. officials say a convoy of Russian military vehicles more than 60 kilometers long has stalled due to fuel and food shortages and resistance from Ukrainians. Linda Thomas Greenfield is the U.S. ambassador to the U.N.
To the Russian soldiers sent to the front lines of an unjust, unnecessary war, I say your leaders are lying to you. Do not commit war crimes. Do everything you can to put down your weapons and leave Ukraine.
The Pentagon Thursday slammed Russian President Vladimir Putin's order earlier this week to place his nuclear forces on increased alert. Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby.
Such provocative rhetoric and possible changes to nuclear posture involving the most consequential weapons in our respective arsenals is unacceptable. The United States has not taken any similar steps.
Kirby announced that the Pentagon would postpone a scheduled intercontinental ballistic missile test this week as a sign the U.S. would not engage in nuclear behavior that could be misunderstood.
We did not take this decision lightly, but instead to demonstrate that we are a responsible nuclear power.
The U.S. continues to send assistance to Ukrainian forces while warning that Russian fighters will learn from their initial failures. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Western Australia finally opens border after COVID-19 closure. North Korea kept Ukraine invasion secret to all except ruling party members. Hong Kong DJ convicted of sedition in watershed trial. U.S. to invite non-political Myanmar representative to ASEAN summit. China positions itself as mediator between Russia and Ukraine. Find complete coverage on all these stories on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia on this Friday. While the United States joins its allies in sanctioning Russian President Vladimir Putin and his top officials for the war in Ukraine, humanitarian advocates in the U.S. are urging the Biden administration to give immigration relief to Ukrainians present on American soil. VOA's immigration reporter Alina Barros has this report.
Second-year college student Andrew Yuminsky is still in a state of disbelief about Russia's attack on his homeland.
It is still quite shocking to see your own country being invaded.
Yuminsky is a Ukrainian student studying in the U.S. on a temporary student visa. The college sophomore says he's following immigration guidelines to continue his studies, but wants to return to Ukraine.
I do intend to go back to Ukraine no matter the outcome.
Like Yuminsky, many Ukrainians face uncertainty about when they can return home and how long they can stay in America. Immigration lawyers and advocacy organizations are pushing for the U.S. to shield Ukrainians from deportation by providing a type of humanitarian relief known as temporary protected status.
And that is a designation that the Secretary of Homeland Security can make for an entire country, a blanket protection for nationals if there are conditions in a country that make safe return impossible, including armed conflict and other extraordinary and temporary conditions, which we are seeing in Ukraine right now and continuing to unfold.
Ukrainian student Roman Kurol is studying at the California Institute of Technology and also holds a temporary student visa. With Ukraine's future uncertain, he and his family are looking for options.
I would be very happy to keep going back home any chance I have. And I was thinking of coming back there after I finished my degree. But at the moment, the situation is so severe that, you know, there are no flights to Ukraine.
Congress established temporary protected status, or TPS, in 1990.
And what temporary protected status, or TPS, does is it provides protection for nationals that are here in the United States for the length of the designation, which can be up to 18 months. And it also can provide work permits for people if they choose to apply for that.
Currently, this authority rests with the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. The department told VOA that officials are monitoring the situation in Ukraine, but declined further comment. According to U.S. Census figures, there are about 105,000 Ukrainian non-citizens in America, and about 2,000 of those are international students who could benefit from TPS or some protected status.
I would really prefer to go back to the independent and sovereign Ukraine with all its territories reclaimed, and I'll do my best to help it.
But for now, Yuminsky and other Ukrainians remain in America, uncertain about their fate and the future of their homeland. Alina Barros, VOA News, Washington.
Still to come on VOA Asia, hear from Uyghur survivors who fled from China to the U.S. Happening now in Asia, at least 5 people are dead due to flooding from 2 days of torrential rain on Indonesia's main island of Java. And the city of Serang was seen submerged from aerial observation Thursday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. 500,000 people in eastern Australia are under evacuation orders or warnings as a wild weather system inundates parts of Sydney. At least 14 people have died and others remain unaccounted for. Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
Australia is well used to nature's extremes, but these floods are extraordinary. Parts of Queensland have had almost 6 months' worth of rain in just 2 days. Government officials have described the extreme weather as a one in a 1,000-year event. Most, if not all, of the 2,100-kilometre coastline of New South Wales, Australia's most populous state, has been hit by ferocious storms with strong winds, dangerous surf, and unprecedented amounts of rain. In Sydney, residents living near swollen rivers have been told to leave their homes before it's too late. In northern New South Wales, flood-hit communities are reportedly running out of food, medicine, drinking water and fuel. New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet says many communities, including those near the Hawkesbury River north of Sydney, are at risk of severe flooding.
We do believe that things will get worse before they get better in our state, but we do expect, particularly in the Hawkesbury region, that the floods will be worse than they were last year.
Parts of Brisbane, the Queensland state capital, flooded again Thursday after yet more storms. Thousands of homes have been without power. State Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk is urging parents to collect their children from school.
This is a serious situation. It is extremely unstable weather conditions. And as a precaution, we would like people to collect their children when they think it is safe to go out on the roads and do so. But they are safe at school until they can come and collect them.
The clean-up bill from Eastern Australia's floods is expected to run into the billions of dollars. The Insurance Council of Australia said Thursday that more than 60,000 claims related to the disaster have been made so far. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Finally on VOA Asia, the site in Berlin where the Nazis surrendered to Soviet and Allied forces in 1945, now a museum, has become embroiled in the current war between Ukraine and invading Russian forces. Henry Ridgewell reports for VOA from the German capital.
May the 8th, 1945. Victorious Allied commanders arrive at Berlin's Tempelhof Airport. The official Nazi capitulation is signed at this former military barracks in East Berlin, captured by Soviet forces. War in Europe is over. The site is preserved, sponsored by an association of German, Russian, Ukrainian and Belarusian historians and known as the German-Russian Museum until now. Following Russia's invasion of Ukraine last week, the director decided to fly only the Ukrainian flag at the front of the museum. The German-Russian Museum name plaque has been obscured. Museum director Jörg Moray explains, "Normally, we display all four flags," he says, "Germany, Russia, Ukraine and Belarus. We see it as an important symbol that we sympathize with Ukraine. Ukraine is the victim here. She was attacked. That's the only point to make. So today, we raised only one flag." The dispute goes far deeper. In World War II, Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union. Nazi atrocities against the Soviets are well documented. Many of those crimes took place on what is now Ukrainian soil. The site of the Nazi capitulation became the German-Russian Museum in 1994 after the fall of the Soviet Union. Two decades later, Russia invaded Ukraine, annexing Crimea, and the museum found itself at the center of a dispute over its name.
Again, Jörg Moray,
he said our Ukrainian colleagues have difficulties working in a museum called the German-Russian Museum. From the German point of view, it was sufficient for quite some time to say we have a museum with Russia, but it's a bit inaccurate. Russia was taken to mean the whole of the Soviet Union. For a long time, that didn't bother anyone. For the Germans, it's very important to have a museum together with our former enemies in war. But we've learned now that it's important to distinguish between Russia, Ukraine and Belarus. On the eve of launching his latest invasion, Russia's president said it was aimed at the denazification of Ukraine. Russia has repeatedly compared Ukraine's government to the Nazis and accused them of committing genocide. Ukraine has strongly rejected such claims and points out that its president, Volodymyr Zelensky, is Jewish and has a grandfather who fought against the Nazis. Museum director Jörg Moray is outraged by Putin's language. "This is a misrepresentation," he says, "a corruption of history that I would never have expected."
Germany and Europe believed war was a part of history never to be repeated, to be remembered in museums like this. But as conflict returns to Europe, Russia is invoking the language of 20th century conflicts as its tanks roll into Ukraine. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Berlin.
That's all the time we have on VOA Asia. Make sure to find us on Facebook, VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA Asia, and on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Gaskill in Washington. Enjoy the day.